kids flow with a super weird word, nightgown. If you ask me, it sounds less like clothes you wear to bed and more like things you say to your clothes. Good night, capri pants, sleep tight sweaters, nightgown. We've got a big day tomorrow. Now a weird word I just made up, flotection. It sounds like great protection for your new home through me and Progressive, and that's because it is. I said good night, capri pants. Go to sleep.
Save an average of 17% on car insurance when you bundle home and auto through Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.
Let's go ahead and get this Dame slander out the way.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the... Nah, that's too disrespectful. I was going to go too far.
Just say it. We might as well just go all the way in. We're going to go all the way in. Just say
welcome it. To the... If you got swept in the first round, you're probably trash podcast, man. I'm here with Legend of Winning himself. Say what's up.
What's up, everybody? Man, it's the one and only Legend of Winning. And the reason why I sound sad right now is because, unfortunately, I have to go in on one of my favorite players in the NBA right now.
Whoa, who is that person, man? I'm curious.
It's Damian Lillard, man.
So Damian. Why would you have to go in on Dame, Lowe? Didn't he have a fantastic season and he's an incredibly underrated fella? What happened?
Well, the story of Dame goes like this, man. For years and years and ages, people far and wide kept saying that Damian Lillard was the most slept on player in the NBA. So much so that Damian Lillard, for an entire season, started to say the same as well. But then finally in the postseason, 2018 to be exact, not only does he get bounced out in the first round, but gets swept, which is history, because the Portland Trail Blazers this year, for those who don't know, this is the first time a third seed or higher was swept in the first round. And Dame himself, the one and only Dame Dollar, is the one who vastly underperformed, as he consistently was outplayed by Drew Holiday.
Drew Holiday? Yeah. What? Really?
Yeah, man.
Wow.
I guess you could say when it comes to Dame time, the hours are going to vary due to the holiday season. Get it?
Yeah, I did. That was corny. You
I'm gonna put it in my video tomorrow too.
Oh God. Okay, I thought you were gonna say you're gonna edit that out. I was gonna say you will not do such a thing.
I'm not editing it. No.
So here's the first elimination, man. I'm surprised they played their fourth game before some people played their third game,
which is really weird.
Yeah. But if Anthony Davis has proved anything to us, it's that. Yo, when he doesn't get injured and he has a healthy season, oh no, and he gets to the playoffs, oh man, just willing to tear it up. Of course, Rajon Rondo was playing well. Drew Holiday throughout was playing well. But I think more than that, they have role players finding ways to step up and just be efficient, effective, even when it didn't show up on the box score throughout the series. I take back what I said in past podcasts because I forced myself to watch the Pelican game. And the first two plays was they threw an alley-oop reverse slam to Anthony Davis. And then the next play was another alley-oop. And I was just like, wow, this is not only an exciting game to watch, but it was a sweet low. 4-0 against the Trailblazers. A lot of people are saying the Trailblazers faked the season because they had such a phenomenal run. It looked like they were at least going to make it out the first round, if not make it competitive. But the first,
did you have it? I don't know. Personally, it's not a surprise to me that the Pelicans beat them in the first round because I had the Pelicans winning anyway.
What about you? I had the Trailblazers in six. It's probably going to be the only series in round one I'm wrong about. But this is one of the series where it didn't really matter who made it. It'd be cool to see Dame in the second round, but it's also going to be dope to see Anthony Davis there for the first time as well.
Well, I'll say this. Let's start positive before we really get into the whole Portland situation. All right. So I agree with you. Healthy Anthony Davis, he provided enough evidence to show us that he is indeed one of the top 10 and he probably even one of the top 5 players in the league when he's healthy and he's performed. Top 5? I think that's fine. I wouldn't because Kawhi's still there, Kevin Durant, LeBron, James Harden, Curry. So, I mean, he might even be top five, but I think he's making an argument for top five. I will also say this. If that team was healthy for, you know, the last, what, 2 or 3 years now, especially when they had Eric Gordon, that team might have actually been a legit playoff team, or at least a consistent playoff team over the last 2 or 3 years. But they have been suffering from a lot of injuries, and we clearly see Jrue Holiday, who's now healthy, the impact that he has on the team, especially in the playoffs. Major props goes out to him as he's been back and forth trying to find his way to get some consistent minutes after his injuries. And he showed up big, one of the better defenders I've seen, especially at the point guard position, in quite some time. And the greatest part about what he was doing was he was also giving you some productivity on the other end of the floor as well. But like you said, like you stated earlier, the role players, the supporting cast, that's really what separated them from the Portland Trailblazers. Mirotić was like automatic. It was just ridiculous throughout the entire series. And Etuan Moore was a consistent threat as well offensively. And I have to give massive props to even Alvin Gentry. I said, you know, not too long ago that Gentry is one of the better coaches in the league. And he doesn't give the credit that he deserves for running that small guard or that three guard lineup that he was running throughout the entire season. So I think that not only that, along with the fact that this series, he basically just said, you know what, I'm going to make someone else besides Dame and CJ beat us. Because all they really did was just double-team Dame and CJ off the pick and roll, and it ended up working. So, you know, credit has to go around to everyone on that team, especially coaching. But, I mean, AD, it looked like he's about to be a problem, man. AD looked like he's about to be a problem.
Yeah. Who do they play? They play the winner of
the Warriors.
Seven, right?
Yeah, Warriors and Spurs, which more shame. Likely be the Warriors. Yeah, Warriors. But I'll say this.
100%. If they're,
yeah, it's 100%. But I'll say this. If they're able to make that series interesting, because Curry is still going to be out that series, I'm going to have to start looking at Dame and AD in a completely different light, even the role players as well. Because if they're able to make that series interesting, then they could potentially, especially what they want to do with DeMarcus Cousins this offseason, put themselves in the conversation of being one of the top 3 to 4 teams in the Western Conference moving forward. Which, again, I think speaks volumes, especially when you're looking at Anthony Davis trying to cement his identity of being a superstar player in today's league. So they could potentially make the next round interesting as well. I don't think they will, but they definitely could.
Well, shout out to Jrue Holiday. He's been playing fantastic throughout the season, and he proved it. Mirotić wasn't shooting that well since the trade, but in the playoffs, it's like we've seen, yeah, I'm going to use the term, playoff Mirotić. A lot like Bogdanović, who we're definitely going to get to. The shooters are showing up this year in the playoffs, man. If the 76ers series, the Raptors series, and now the Pelican series isn't an example, you know, people are shooting lights out, and it is very exciting to watch. Makes for some seriously exciting plays. Hands down, the most embarrassing series right here, because a lot of people had this one being contested and wildly uninteresting, but it turned out to be quite the opposite both times. But I want to switch things up because we've had enough Dame
slander. No. We definitely have not had enough Dame slander.
What are you? You're not done?
First of all, we really haven't even touched on Dame in Portland. So in your eyes, what does Portland have to do moving forward? Because
they need talent. They need so much of it. It's like Aminu was stepping up in a couple of the games. And I was thinking to myself, like, Aminu? Like, and it's one thing if he could do it every single game, and then other games, Leonard steps up. And but it's like they don't have enough people, though. When you watch a team like the Raptors, when Lowry and DeRozan aren't stepping up, they have other players like Van Fleet and DeLon Wright and Anunoby, who both on the defensive and offensive end. They don't have anyone like that. They don't have enough depth. And because of that, anytime Dame and CJ McCollum are double teamed or receive a lot of pressure, there's no way to relieve that pressure. That's it. And part of it is like Dame could have done better, right? Because it's a wildly pathetic performance. But I'm not willing to just drop all the blame on him. There's no way it's all his fault. Management is doing a horrible job of building around him.
Are they doing a horrible job, Agent?
A horrible job, because they're not making any significant or noticeable improvements. And so Dame should have done better. You have to win at least two games in that series, no doubt, because you were doing it during the regular season. And so you can't just turn around and blame the management 100%, of course. But I think there's blame to be divided here. And of course, some of it should go to the management for doing such a poor job over all these years of building around him.
When, like, what on the percentage scale, what are we saying?
I'd say like 30% organization, 70% team.
Okay, okay. As long as we're saying majority of it still goes to the team.
Yeah.
But out of the 70%, how much are you putting on Dame?
A lot of it. Like, okay. That's got to be like 50%. It has to be.
I'll say this. I agree with you that the supporting cast outside of Aminu, because like you said, Aminu was, he was doing whatever he was supposed to do. Consistent three-point shooter. And I have to give a lot of props to Aminu, because entering the NBA and even his first 3 to 4 years in the league, he was not a consistent three-point shooter at all. And it is pretty impressive to see him make that transition in the aspect of his game that he had to improve significantly. So I give Aminu all the props, and he's still been a consistent defender. Also, CJ McCollum, this series, he did basically what he was supposed to do. 20-point score, great shooting splits, not only from the field, but also from behind the arc. The free throw shots, you want him to get a little bit more attempts and knock them down more consistently, as he only got, I don't even think he attempted 10 free throws that entire series. However, everyone else on the roster was just completely suspect. Nurkic, which is a huge question mark moving forward, because he's a free agent. He's a free agent next season. I mean, we're talking about missing layups. I mean, we're talking about not rebounding properly, not boxing out, no hustle. And I understand it is Anthony Davis, but there were just moments during that series where there was, you can just clearly tell that he was just getting outplayed consistently. And from a player who many just assumed was going to be the final piece, as he was a scoring option and gave you a little bit of rim protection in that front court, that he might actually be a huge difference maker. But I gotta get on Dame here. I'm sorry, Dame. And again, I like Dame. Now let's get something clear now.
Nah, don't hedge. Don't hedge.
Dame, no. I'm gonna just say this one thing. Dame is one of my favorite players in the NBA. But Damian Lillard, you cannot go the entire season telling people how underrated you are, how undervalued you are, how overlooked and quote-unquote underrated you are, and then turn out to be one of the most overrated players in the NBA right now. Damian Lillard, you cannot shoot 30, and it's one thing if you want to say he shoots low 40s. Before this last game, because the numbers haven't updated, but in the first three games, Damian Lillard was shooting 32% from the field. 32%. Not only that, for people out there who get caught up in the highlights and who keep just remembering and replaying that one clutch shot he had against Houston, guess what? That is literally the only highlight of Damian Lillard's postseason career. Because if you look at Damian Lillard's numbers, it's a consistent theme that he just doesn't show up when it comes to his ability to shoot the ball and score on an efficient basis in the postseason. As he is one of the most, if not the most, inefficient volume score in postseason history. And that's
after
not
Melo,
me.
Of course.
No. It's not after Melo. No. Even Melo. Melo's about to get there though this year, because the way he's shooting, Jesus Christ. But even with Melo, right now, when you talk about just field goal percentage, from any player that is averaging 23 points or more in the postseason, Damian Lillard is the worst, as he is shooting under 40%. That's worse than Iverson. That's worse than DeMar DeRozan. That's worse than Carmelo Anthony. That's worse than anyone that you can think of. He is literally the worst at the field goal percentage. And obviously, you take into account true shooting percentage and effective field goal percentage, whatever else you want to look at, he's not too far behind from whoever else he's competing for when it comes to that bottom spot. So Damian Lillard has been consistently inconsistent. So when it comes to Damian Lillard, the problem is that if you're not defending, which he's not, if you're not facilitating, which there was a couple of blown passes that he had throughout the entire series as he couldn't make the right decisions when they were double teaming him. And if you're not showing up in the postseason offensively, then what are you doing? And let's also keep in mind that, and I'll wrap it up like this, because I don't want to give away, I don't want to give too much of my video away. You know what I'm saying? I got to leave a little something, something on the table, right? But you can't sit here and tell me that this team moving forward can get that much better. Because the reality is, if you want to put their record into context, even though, yes, they were the third seed, they were three or four games away from being not a playoff team, the ninth seed in the Western Conference. And when you take into consideration that Paul Millsap missed majority of the season, borderline all the season for the Denver Nuggets, Kawhi was out for basically the entire season for the Spurs, Rudy Gobert missed games, Andre Roberson missed games, Jimmy Butler missed games, everyone...
DeMarcus Cousins was out.
We're literally talking about everyone below them had significant injuries or significant changes to their roster. So there's a huge possibility next season, those teams that they obviously can't compete with will be significantly better. So if you are Portland and people think that people are just over-exaggerating or embellishing or just overreacting to what they're seeing... No, it's a legitimate question if they should really blow this up. That's not something that we're just overreacting to. It's a legitimate question in the Western Conference, as we're assuming that it's going to get better with time progressing and Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum seem like they've peaked. If this is the best that you're going to get with this unit, blowing it up is a very legitimate argument.
I agree. Shout out to Dame, you're trash. Oh, damn.
Dame, you're not a top 5 point guard. I don't want to hear that argument anymore. And quite frankly, Drew Holiday is on your ass for that 6 or 7 spot or wherever you at right now. But you're not better than Chris Paul, Steph Curry, Kyrie, John Wall, Russell Westbrook. Now, you're not better than the players, bro. You're not better.
Damn. You're not better. Wow. And you said that's one of your favorite players?
I can't say he's still one of my favorite players because I'm not even going to lie to you. I can't rock with someone who just shoots 30% from the field in the first round of the playoffs. And you got home court advantage. I can't do that, man.
You just cut off Dame, man. That's Jesus.
Yeah, I just can't rock with that.
Okay. All right. Well, you trash Dame, bro.
Oh,
damn. All right. It wasn't me that said it. I don't think Dame is necessarily trash. I just think, like Lowry, that there's going to be games where he's just off. Like, there's games where Lowry really doesn't do shit.
We're talking about defend. A whole series. Come on.
But the difference, but the difference being is Lowry is always there on defense. There's never a game where he's just not.
Exactly. If Lowry isn't making the shots, he's still defending and playmaking. Bro, this man Dame, he doesn't do that. Like, he's just there to score. And if you're not scoring, bro, you trash. You are trash.
Can't argue with that fact. Listen, man, I don't know about trash. He might be pushing it.
No, he's trash. How about this? The last 4 games that people will remember of Dame this season is that he was trash. And they were in 4 very, very important... They're not only important games to this season, but in my opinion, this year will... this is a series that will define Dame's career. People will remember this series.
Oh, but I think he has a chance to redeem himself, though.
Obviously he has a chance to do it, but it's still going to be on his resume. It's still going to be his own. It's going to be on his resume.
It's going to be on his resume the same way. Maybe not the same way, but like when LeBron James lost to the Mavs, when they clearly had the talent to win that series. I think it was in 2011.
Exactly.
I think it's going to be there the same way. So, I mean, if Dame is serious about calling himself that underrated player, he's going to have to find a way to bounce back next year.
Dame,
if they don't make the playoffs next year, though, or two, they don't make it to the second round.
I'm going to tell you right now, they might not make the playoffs next year.
I also agree, because with Denver improving, who I feel like deserved to be in the playoffs, and then you have teams like... I don't see any team that's falling off. I see all the teams getting healthy again, And then depending on the Kawhi situation, the Spurs might be an opening, but I don't know. We'll see.
And do you think that Dame is going to get significantly better?
We don't know, because, like, I mean, I didn't think DeRozan was going to be able to shoot the three ball, but he's doing the shit. So, I mean, I don't want to. It's too, like, nobody knows, right?
Yeah, let me answer that for you. No, no.
I don't know about all that.
No,
man.
He's not. No, I'll answer that for you. I know he's not. I mean, okay. There's not really much else that he can do, because he's definitely not playing defense. I'll say that right now.
So, low, man, the Cavaliers,
I get to LeBron. I get to shit on LeBron
feels,
and the Cavs.
It feels fantastic to be right, man. I keep trying to tell people that nobody is invincible and that everybody can lose games. And time again, I keep hearing that the main reason the Cavaliers won't lose to the Pacers is because it's the Cavaliers. They always win. But
No. It's LeBron. It's people
they deflect as his teammates. So here's what I saw low in the game, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I saw Kyle Korver dive at three loose balls in the fourth quarter alone. Two of them were going out of bounds, and he dived into the audience to get them. One of them resulted in a jump ball. Here's what I saw, man. I saw Kevin Love picked up LeBron's game-losing three-point shot, went to the corner, shot the three to make it a game. But granted, LeBron played fantastic. I mean, aside from that miss, he was like cold-blooded. There was the situation where he didn't come back on defense, and we'll talk about that. We know LeBron played great.
And the turnovers.
Yes. But every single time you ask a LeBron fan about why they lost the game, they always find a way to deflect to their teammates. And so these situations in the game where people are diving for loose balls, getting offensive rebounds for LeBron's misses, or in certain situations, J.R. Smith not making the correct pass at the end of the game, when he had absolutely no passing lane to make the shot, let alone the time to even consider making that shot. It's one thing to be Ricky Rubio or Ben Simmons or one of these elite-level point guards. You have the vision. But you're expecting, and a lot of people deflected to J.R. Smith, and I've seen that a lot. The Pacers are a really good team. You split at home with them. And so now the Pacers won one at home. They're up 2-1. You cannot be surprised that a team that's been performing well the entire season is not just flopping and folding because it's the playoffs and it's LeBron. I do think the Cavs are still going to win the series. But as the games go closer, it's like, I don't know. It might be pushed to 7. Who knows? The Pacers might even win it. But the fact that people just straight up think he's invincible is ridiculous to me. So, Lo, I want you to talk about how the game ended. We'll talk first about LeBron, and there was an individual play where Bogdanovich was, by the way, lights out. He shot a three-pointer, and somebody had the camera footage, and LeBron didn't run back on defense. So the Cavs were playing 4v5 defense. It resulted in a wide-open three-point shot. And then he was just there cherry-picking to begin the offensive set.
Wasn't he guarding Bogdanovich that game? Or am I bugging?
Bogdanovich was guarding him. I don't know if it was the other way around.
Yeah, I definitely know that. I mean, at the end of the game, the one thing that I saw at the end of the game was that offensively, the Cavs became so stagnant that everyone is just really standing around and just looking at LeBron to create. And normally they get away with it because normally not only do they have LeBron, but they also have Kyrie. And Kyrie is elite at the dribble penetration, breaking down his defender, and finding an open player. LeBron, even though he can from time to time do that, his ability to create his own shot and dribble penetrate isn't at the same level as Kyrie, especially if he can't get by his initial defender. And so that became a problem. It became extremely difficult for the Cavaliers to find some type of offense when it comes to the when it comes to that fourth quarter stretch. But to me, it's the defense. I mean, that is the biggest problem with that Cavaliers team, because when you're looking at a game where Miles Turner and Oladipo just didn't play well at all, and yet they were still able to find play after on the ending of the pace, were still able to find Bogdanovich.
I don't know if it was a play calling, Lo. They were setting why the fuck were they doing a trap defense at the end of the game? It resulted in like three or four open three-pointers.
But when you do that, you have to rotate. That's what I'm saying. You have to rotate and know.
But yeah, it relies on good rotations. But I don't think that should have been called to begin with. They were fine before they forced the pressure. Like, a regular pressure defense would have probably got them the win based on how LeBron was playing. But instead, they decided to begin trapping. And it was disastrous because with bad rotations and bad communication, every single time the same person getting open was Bogdanović.
But see, that's the reason why it didn't work, and that's the reason why it was stupid. If you trap and you leave, let's say, Thad Young open at the three, that's a much better, and not to say that Thad Young is just, he can't shoot threes, but you're at a way bigger advantage with the trapping and leaving Thad Young open than a sharpshooter and Bogdanović. Like that, why is he the last person that you're rotating to? That is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. And not only that, there was moments where they were trapping one pass away. It was the dumbest thing I've ever seen.
So Very stupid.
The trapping, I don't have a problem with. Just make sure you understand the personnel that's on the floor and understand who you're leaving open. But Collison played, he shot poorly that game. So did Oladipo and so did Miles Turner. So if you're leaving someone open, leave the players that are open who are not hitting their shots. But to sit there and to allow Bogdanović to go off for like almost 20 points in the second half, 20 of his 30 points nearly came in the second half. For that to happen, that is inexcusable. And that is just poor defense. You don't know the personnel on the floor and you're making the exact same error every single play. That was their problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot to be said about that game. Late in the fourth quarter, I've seen LeBron in that situation so many times where he's down, but not by a lot. And then he just starts to go like cold-blooded beast mode. And every single one of those times, he almost always comes out with the win. Literally, when there was like 4 minutes left, I didn't have a doubt that the Cavaliers were going to find a way to win. I was surprised that the Pacers were finding a way to keep it interesting, considering they were down 17. Yes, and they managed to come back, which is, I mean, if you're the Cavaliers, you got to think about that. So in the past, what would usually be like a straight up W. And I think also, Kevin, this was the game Kevin Love injured his hand, right? So he wasn't there? No, he did play at the very end. He got back in the game. Yeah.
Yeah, he got back.
So I'm hoping
also another problem moving forward. I mean, I'm pretty sure he may be able to play, but how effective he will be, I don't know.
Yeah. And the interesting thing was the Pacers were turning it over so much. Kevin Love got injured on his hand because of another turnover. They basically threw the ball right into his hand. And then, you know when like you're playing ball and like it hits your finger, like it perpendicularly hits your finger and your finger like pops?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could feel his pain as he was holding on to his hand. Here's what I'll say, man. I said this and I'll say it again. Nobody is immune. But more importantly, I think that when you put a team in a situation that LeBron did, where everybody has to be so passive and they have to bend to the will of LeBron, y'all need to stop blaming and being surprised when all of these players aren't performing 100%. I said it on the last podcast. Nobody cannot touch the ball for most of the game and then be expected to make an amazing play. Like Kevin Love did, actually, when he hit that corner three. The Cavaliers' defense is sus. The play calling at the end of the game was sus. LeBron was hitting some crazy shots, but it just wasn't enough, man. Yo, what's the chances that the Patriots actually come away with the win in round one? Because you're talking shit about Dame, bro. But if we find out LeBron gets eliminated in the first round, that's going to hurt.
I'm going to tell you right now, if LeBron gets eliminated in the first round, and let's be clear about this as well, because, and actually, as I say this, let me look up this this tweet that someone sent us to answer, because
this is the one you DM'd me?
Yeah, that was the dumbest shit I ever heard. I DM'd it to you just so I can remember it and so I can have it to the side. But let me be clear about this as well. A huge reason why they lost that 17-point lead, if I'm not mistaken, was because of the third quarter that they had, and it was abysmal from all ends, including LeBron. And that in that third quarter, LeBron shot 1-for-6 from the field. No one was hitting their shots, including Kevin Love. That was the quarter in which Kyle Korver took all three of his shots and missed all three of them from behind the arc. And again, Kyle Korver played, I think, like 20 minutes, and he only took shots in the third quarter. So again, like you said, you can't just expect someone to just stand in the corner for like the entire game and then not only be prepared to knock down their shots, which I would assume Kyle Korver would be able to do that just because he's that great of a shooter. But for average shooters or even below average shooters like J.R. Smith, Jordan Clarkson, Rodney Hood, those players, I don't know why people just think that they're just cold-blooded assassins like a Kyle Korver or maybe even a Klay Thompson, that it's just automatic regardless of how many touches they get. But that third quarter really, really killed them. But to answer your question, man, I'm going to give LeBron the benefit of the doubt the same way that I gave Kobe in 2011 the benefit of the doubt. When Kobe was down 0-2, 0-3, I was still like, nah, Kobe, it's Kobe. Kobe going to come back. And so I keep giving them the benefit of the doubt, and I still think that they're going to win this series. But I will say this. For the people out there who thought that me and Agent were crazy when we said that the Raptors are going to beat them, yeah, that definitely does not seem that crazy right now.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
What's up? It's Justin from the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. When I was in eighth grade, I switched from wearing glasses to contacts because I liked playing the game of basketball. And ever since then, I've had to deal with getting contacts, which takes way too long. You have to sit in the waiting room for a really long time. It always kind of smells weird in there. That all changed when I found simplecontacts.com. You show them a picture of your prescription. You pick the brand of contacts that you use. You put in your address and they're on their way. And so much cheaper than going to a doctor every single time you need contacts. Took me about 15 minutes right before I left for work, and we're going to save you $30 off your first order with them at simplecontacts.com/almighty, or use the enter code almighty at checkout. That's $30 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/almighty, or enter the code almighty at checkout. Just remember, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. They only do a test that makes sure your contacts are going to give you 20/20 vision. They don't write completely new RXs or examine eye health.
Things change, man, and I'm glad they do. I'm so tired of seeing the same teams in the playoffs. Thank you for the Pacers for just making this playoffs interesting. Even Houston took a loss today, and we'll talk about that as well. So, I'm on the same page as you. I think they will end up winning in seven, but who knows? Who knows how things will play out?
Let me read this guy's Twitter. I mean, it's just at Twitter. Let me read this guy's tweet real quick. Ryan M. Brunner. I guess that's how you spell his name or pronounce it, but his name is Ryan. His question to us was, or his tweet says, serious question for you guys. LeBron might leave this exact team this offseason and they'd go from a 50 plus win team to 10 to 15 wins. So how can you say he has the help that is needed to compete with teams like the Rockets and the Warriors? And then he continues to go on to say, or someone else says, and they reply to him, finally someone understands. Part of my argument when I get into the MJ versus LeBron argument, then they go on to say, as LeBron carries whatever team he's on, before he went to the Heat, the Cleveland Cavaliers went from a playoff team to now they're below 500 and never were above 500 team until he came back. And then Ryan comes back and says, exactly. Or what about the fact that the very next season, LeBron leaves the Heat and they go from a 54 win team to 37 wins, even with Bosh and Wade still on the court. So you want to answer his question?
Lo, that is the dumbest shit I heard about. I honestly, when you DM me that, I was wondering why, because it made no sense. I knew for a fact you weren't agreeing with the nonsense
talking about. Absolutely, absolutely. Come on, Agent. Come on. You think so, I'm agreeing with
him? Just to
put
things in context, when the year before Kevin Love left the Timberwolves, he was the leading player on that team in the 2013-14 season, and he scored 26.1 points per game. And that team had 40 wins, and that's just with Kevin Love. We're forgetting how important Rodney Hood was to that Utah Jazz team, how Larry Nance has the potential and athleticism to be a good starter in this league. We're forgetting that George Hill is a top 3-and-D player if he could just find a way to stay healthy.
I disagree with that part, but keep going.
I do agree. He did experience two serious injuries since he was with the Pacers, but I think he can get back to that. So this is a team that, regardless of any potential accolade, regardless of what they were able to accomplish on a previous team, Kyle Korver, one of the greatest shooters in history, right? I can keep going down the list. These guys have to play a role. because as everything runs through LeBron on a team that's so focused on isolation basketball, they can't play like they played in the past. And exactly. So if LeBron leaves, they're going to start moving the ball around because they no longer have talent to just run a straight-up ISO game. It just wouldn't work. And so a 15-win season, they're winning at least 40, 45 games.
I was going to say 10. He said 10 to 15. That's a bit of a stretch.
That's ridiculous. 10? What's the worst of all time? It's 9 wins, right?
Something like that.
Cause I have
to
check.
It's not 10 because the Sixers just did that like a few years ago.
Okay, worst record in NBA history. I have to check this because...
I think it was the Bobcats, that lockout season. While you look that up, I'll say this. One, let's get something completely clear. Me nor agent has ever said that this team can compete with the Rockets or Warriors because we don't even think this team can compete with the Raptors, okay? So let's get that clear. We don't even believe that this team is going to make it out of the Eastern Conference, let alone compete with whatever team comes out of West. So that is not an argument that we're making. And quite frankly, I don't think that's an argument that really anyone Jesus is making. Low.
So the lowest is 7, but that was in the shortened season after the whole CBA debacle in the 2011-12 season. So in a full season, the lowest wins is the 76ers in the 72-73 season. And they had 9 wins. So what this guy is saying, that they will be after LeBron leaves this team with all these players that I just mentioned before, that they're going to literally side by side with one of the worst teams in NBA history. You got to be kidding me, man. How delusional could you possibly be if you think that's the case? That is fucking hilarious, Lo. That is so hilarious that someone can actually say that and believe what they said. It's crazy what bias will make you do. Because there's no way a reasonable person who doesn't watch basketball, if you explain him the context, believe exactly what this person is saying.
And I'm happy you said context, because that is the part that LeBron fans, for whatever reason, they decide to pick and choose what part of the context they actually believe apply to an argument. So for the context in which he's referring to when he says when LeBron left the Heat, they went from a 54 to 37 win team, even though Bosh and Wade were still on the court, that is incorrect. That is a lie. The way I know that is a lie and it's incorrect is because Bosh played half of the season that year. And the reason why I remember that is because the same injury that kept him sidelined for the remainder of the season is the same injury, which is the blood clots, is why he may have to retire from his basketball career. And D. Wade was in and out of the lineup the entire season as well. So for you to sit here and tell me, which really, all it really means, because you can't form your own opinion, you're just regurgitating what someone else says. But if you don't understand the context behind what happened in Miami, please don't tell me about what value is, because you don't even know what you're talking about. But what you're mistaking value for is dependence. They form an offense that is heavily dependent on LeBron, and that doesn't do anything but hurt LeBron and hurt the team as a whole. Because
And on that point, Lo, because if you want to bring up the Miami Heat and how LeBron left, we know Dwayne Wade was a champion before LeBron even got there, that he was a top player in the league, and people have been arguing whether he's a top 5 shooting guard of all time or where he ranks in that list. But let me remind you, because I'm from Toronto, so I remember vividly, before CB4, Chris Bosh went to the Miami Heat, he was one of the, if not the best, low post player. He was out there doing up and unders, just absolutely saucing people. He had no ability whatsoever to shoot a 3-point shot. But when he began to play with LeBron, he realized LeBron is going to run the offense. And so what he began to do was to work around LeBron in his play style. And so that's what the Heat did. Chris Bosh went from a low post player to a corner specialist, basically, from the 3-point line.
Which is ridiculous.
Basically exactly what Trevor Ariza is doing now. So Trevor Ariza just sits there at the 3-point line, and that's all he ever has to do. And so in the same exact circumstance why Chris Bosh had to sacrifice part of his game for LeBron, the players on LeBron's team right now are doing the same thing. And instead of supporting the team and the players as a whole and saying, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have played trap defense in the last play. Oh, man, Bogdanovich was hot. There's nothing we could have done. They begin to deflect on the players that have sacrificed to help bring the team to where it is right now, which I think if I was one of those players, I would feel insulted that every time after a game, when you know you did everything you possibly could have and you played a good game, they go, oh, no, really only the person who played well is Kevin Love. Aside from Kevin Love, nobody else played well. Then the next game, see, everybody's trash. Nobody played well. And they're so willing to just throw their... It's your team. It's your basketball team.
And not only that, this man LeBron went to bat to get players like J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson. So even if you're saying that they're trash, these are the players that LeBron recruited. Yeah, people are acting as if like LeBron A didn't pick the teams that he wanted to go to, and B didn't have any type of influence, which in Cleveland he definitely had not only an influence but a heavy influence on who was on his team and who wasn't, because he went to bat for J.R. Smith and Tristan Thompson to not just get contracts, but to get ridiculous contracts and are overpaid. So let's not act like, even if you want to see him say that they're trash, these are players that LeBron decided to play with. So let's cut that shit out. If he really wanted to play on a team with great players and great coaching, A, his numbers wouldn't be as great as they are. He would have to sacrifice, because a great coach will put a system around him to sacrifice his numbers. So that's A. And B, if he were around some other great players, then by your own definition of what you believe is valuable, he would not be as valuable as you are determining him, because he would have the help that is needed to win a championship. But that's not what you want as a LeBron fan. You want LeBron to struggle, and you want him to carry a team as much as he can, just so you can belittle the amount of help that he has to make some quality argument or attempt to make a quality argument that he's better than Michael Jordan. That's literally the only reason, Lo.
That's
your end goal.
They're willing to throw teammates on their favorite team under the bus just so they can make a strengthened argument for why Michael Jordan is not better. Stop it. Stop comparing eras for a second. We know LeBron's a great player. We've seen it in the game. We've seen what he was able to, the amount of 3-point shots he was dropping.
Which was crazy. There was like a stretch where LeBron was just knocking down threes. I was like, God damn. I know. That was unbelievable.
So we know how great he is. The only frustrating part is when you finish the game and you go on Twitter and everybody's saying it's the whole team's fault. It's never LeBron. LeBron could miss the game losing free throw. And it was, LeBron did miss a game losing shot.
I'm about to say, he did, he missed it. He did.
And it's still always going to be somebody else's fault, which is crazy. The Cavs are a good team. They've had their issues, especially defensively, and they need whoever called trap defense needs to stop making decisions immediately.
Oh, Ty Lue needs to get fired too.
Remember, when you're having these arguments about whose fault it is, you're not playing no bum ass team. It's not the same Eastern Conference you once known, and you no longer have Kyrie on your team to help close a lot of the games that LeBron had helped with in the past.
That's a fact. Let's please give it up for Kyrie for a good second.
Yeah, shout out to Kyrie.
Because that's definitely a massive difference.
You're playing against the Pacers. They're a good team. And you were playing away. And so when Bogdanovich is hitting shots and the crowd goes crazy and he just has all the confidence in the world, you did that because you split a game on your home court, a game you should have won. A lot of people also blame refs, but it happens in every game. Any team that loses, the ref had something to do with it. And granted, sometimes the ref didn't mess up. But in this situation, I don't think the ref had anything to do with the decision. If anything, I think the ref was calling more calls for the Cavaliers' late game. But he was pretty split down the middle.
And let me also say this before we move. I want to be clear about this because I know people are hearing us and they may not really understand what we're saying. I'm not saying that we can't look at J.R. Smith's inconsistent shooting because he has been trash, especially from behind the arc. I'm not sitting here saying that Rodney Hood or Kyle Korver is excusable for how poorly they're shooting. I understand all of that. But my whole argument and what I think Agent is saying as well is that you cannot keep saying that, oh man, LeBron is just so valuable. You can throw him on any team and they're going to make the finals. Because that has literally been an argument that's been made for LeBron for the past 3 years. And so now we're at a point where, A, LeBron is, he's not the same player that he once was. I know people are ignorant and they just like to look at points, rebounds, and assists. And that makes them say, oh, LeBron is having the best season of his career. And they really think that that's true, but it's not. I mean, anyone who's watching LeBron, especially on the defensive end, they understand that he's not playing at the same level that he once was. It's the way that the NBA is being played right now. But you can't sit here and just have an argument to why LeBron is so valuable because he could just make any team a title contender. But now he's on any old team and he's struggling to get out the first round. Again, I'm not putting all the blame on him because there are players who need to be making their shots. But let's not overlook what LeBron is and isn't doing as well, because some of the turnovers are ridiculous. Some of the missed opportunities are ridiculous as well. And when you look at the play, especially in game one, where like the whole first half, he just wasn't aggressive at all. It can be more done on everyone's part. And I think that's the frustrating part when you go on Twitter and everybody's like, the whole team was just trash. Ah, and it's like, Jesus Christ. Like, LeBron just played a perfect game. Sure. All right. You got it.
Okay, Lo, I want to talk about the Timberwolves for a second, because they managed to get a win off the Houston Rockets, and I'm really happy they did, because I had a feeling Houston was going to play horribly, and they were going to lose one game. I had the Rockets winning in five, and this could possibly be that one token game, or it could be a sign of life for the Timberwolves, man. They ended up winning a game. Shout out to Wiggins, he played well, so you can't talk shit about him now. In this specific circumstance. But as a whole, the team played well. I actually didn't catch the game. I'm just looking at scores. So you got to tell me, Lo, what did the team do right? And how did they win the game against the Houston Rockets? Aside from the fact that, of course, they're playing at home.
Well, they better defense rotations, better communication on a defensive end, better effort as well. So defensively, they played a lot better. More discipline when it comes to closing out three-point shooters and defending on the perimeter, especially from their bigs. Taj Gibson had a really good game defensively, especially on the switches. So I like that. And the effort, yeah, they got much more effort offensively from Wiggins this game. So that's nice to see. I will say this though, when it comes to the Houston Rockets, the reason why I'm so concerned about them, if we're being honest, if you go back through the games with the Houston Rockets, they haven't really played that great shooting-wise. I mean, they are literally a team that lives and die by the three, and they have consistently struggled from behind the arc this entire series. It's just the fact that the Minnesota Timberwolves have also been struggling, so they've been able to find some ways to win games, but P.J. Tucker had another terrible game from the field. Then Trevor Ariza he only shot threes. He did nothing else but just stand in the corner. Eric Gordon came off the bench and did nothing at all for them. And even though, yes, James Harden, he had his moments, he just wasn't able to get into his bag as much as he was able to in other games. And you got a healthy supply of good teamwork from everyone on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Jeff Teague was penetrating, kicking it out, got 8 assists. I think he only turned the ball over once. Jimmy Butler was much more active and consistent from the field. Towns, he was active on the boards. I'll give him that. But it was a few post shots, and I don't know if he just needs to get into a rhythm, or I don't know. But some of his post looks, they're not looking. It looks like he doesn't have like a go to move yet in the post, which is kind of concerning, especially when he should be able to just punish whatever team they go up against, because they would have a massive advantage with Towns. But, I mean, if I'm Houston, I would be concerned, even if they make it out the first round, which I believe they will. But I'm concerned because P.J. Tucker has not hit his shots, neither has Eric Gordon. And that's literally what you're expecting out of this team, is to knock down their shots, and they have been able to do so. But very similar to what I've been saying with the Cavs, I don't know why people just think that you can just have a player stand in the corner for the entire game and think that they're just going to be automatic. I don't know where that thought process comes from, but I mean, I guess that's how we play in basketball now.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna. I watched that series just to see if Wiggins is gonna do well or not.
He had a good game tonight. He made the threes that he needed to make. He definitely played good tonight.
But aside from that, I mean, we know who's gonna win that series. The Houston Rockets, of course, are gonna find a way.
I'm keeping a buck with you, and I'm very serious about this.
I want to stop you before you say something crazy.
If Houston keeps shooting as bad as they've been shooting,
they won't.
All three games it's been players who have been just honestly, because
that's how it is with the Rockets. So it's nothing new. They have played.
All they need is
a few players to step up and perform. Because there's gonna be players with off games. There always is on that team. It's just the way the team operates.
I mean, yeah, I get that, but there hasn't been a game where, like, they had multiple players shooting well. And not only that, like, I don't even think there's been a game where they've scored over, like, 107.
Yeah, game two, they had multiple players shooting well. The only person who wasn't was James Harden that game.
No, P.J. Tucker, I guess he shot 40% from behind the arc.
Stop. P.J. Tucker is just there for defense.
Trevor Ariza didn't shoot well, and neither did Eric Gordon. Gerald Green came off the bench. He played really well in game two. But it was really just Gerald Green, Chris Paul, and Clint Capella on the boards. I mean that's literally how they won that game. And they only scored 102 points, which I know is a lot of points, but for a team in Houston that scores 110 and plus, I mean, this is a team that's struggling consistently. This isn't like a one-game thing. The Minnesota Timberwolves could have easily beat them in game one if they executed much better, especially with the missed opportunities with Towns in the post. I'm not saying that they're going to win or lose. I'm not going to say that, because some of the things that I'm seeing from Minnesota, especially from Towns, is extremely questionable. But they could possibly make it much more interesting than I think many people are willing to give credit to them. Because
I haven't seen Minnesota as a team be efficient for an extended period of time the entire season.
You're right.
I don't see them keeping it up. But I did, in anticipation that Minnesota would have one really good game and the Rockets would be off, maybe even at home, that they would win a game. So I'm kind of happy I didn't go for the sweep, because I was really considering the Rockets sweep. But anyway, I want to move on to a series where I can say I told you so. Now, the Utah Jazz, last time we did the podcast, were down 0-1.
Oh, my God.
And they were down 0-1, right? And I said, do not trip. The Jazz are going to win this series. They won the last two games.
You have the Jazz winning?
Oh, I have the Jazz winning in six.
Oh, wow. Oh, the ball's on you. Oh, wow.
It's not the balls, though, because it's one thing to see OKC and think about all the talent, but I don't give a fuck how different you think the playoffs are. There is no way I expected OKC to be consistent, right?
You don't trust in playoff, P?
No, not at all, man. Not at all. So after game one, Paul George hasn't been playing too well. Game three, we finally seen a decent game out of Melo. He shot like 60%, I think. But Westbrook was the one in game three who was inefficient. And so
every game in the playoffs so far, but go ahead.
Okay. But he's made a significant contribution in the other two games. In this game, I feel like he was almost holding the team back. And so here's
almost
again.
Almost. No, he was completely holding the team back.
Okay. So the Utah Jazz are different in a lot of ways, because I remember in the last podcast, I focused on Rubio. I said Rubio has to get a shooting on point. Not only in game two did Rubio shoot lights out from three, he actually wasn't efficient in game three, but he not only got a triple-double, but the defense, at least, especially after game two, was willing to step up on him, and so they weren't just giving him the same shots they were in the past. And so that opened up the floor for a lot of other people. Even with Donovan Mitchell not shooting fantastic in game three, they were able to win the game.
Donovan Mitchell shot great. He still shot good in game three.
A lot of people see the names on paper and they think, bro, Donovan Mitchell is the only offensive type player on the team.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what I'm looking at.
I've been trying to say the same reason they've been winning the games throughout the regular season is they find ways to get buckets. And a lot of that is fueled off the defense, because they're a great defensive team. And so I had no doubt that Gobert was going to find a way to make the already inefficient and inconsistent team more inefficient and inconsistent. And so with the next game being at home, the Utah Jazz have a really good opportunity to get a commanding lead. And I think they'll take advantage of it, man. And who knows? Again, Lo, it's going to all depend on whether OKC is willing to step up as a team or whether they're going to be shooting off again. And, you know, when the Houston Rockets shoot off, I'm still confident that they're going to win the game in most situations. But I don't have that confidence in OKC because throughout the season, they gave me no reasons to have confidence in them. Now, that's why I had the Jazz winning.
Now, is there anything else you want to say about Russ? Anything else?
Russ? No, I'll wait till the end of the season before I...
Okay. I guess that's really... Because I don't know if I should wait or should I just... Should I get in my bag?
It's been
I'm gonna wait. All right, fine. I'll wait.
Let me just ask a what if question, man.
Okay.
What if Russell gets bounced in the first round with Paul George and Melo on his team?
So this is a hypothetical, right?
It's just hypothetical. It's not real, of course.
So
just hypothetical.
What if allegedly, right? I mean, that's what we're saying. Like, what if if he does? Okay, so if OKC gets knocked out in the first round, if Russell Westbrook would be the most overrated player I've seen in the last 10 years.
You went harder than I thought you were going to go.
Russell Westbrook. Now, let's get clear. Now, let's be clear. This is an if now.
Yeah, it's definitely allegedly. Yeah.
Because, yeah. I mean, with they would be bounced out in the first round, that would also assume that Russell Westbrook would have to have played really, really bad, which so far he is, in my opinion. So if this is an if, though, I want to be clear now. This is an if because I, for people who really think that I hate Russell Westbrook, I have enough. I don't know. I don't know if it's blind hope or I don't know what it is, but I honestly believe Russell Westbrook is a good enough player. Scratch that. A great enough player for him to lead a team past the first round. I really believe that. I think he is a great enough player when he has a talent around him that he's able to make it past the first round. I really do. But if, this is all if in hypotheticals and allegedly, if he doesn't make it past the first round, he is easily the most overrated player in the last 10 years. Easily.
Interestingly enough, getting insane statistics and triple doubles doesn't help you win games if you can't lead your team to a victory.
You know,
and
so,
part of leading it,
you know, so crazy though. Tonight, if he had one more assist, he would have had a triple double, so that would have secured the win.
Oh. So
he needed is just one more assist, and it would have secured the win tonight. Who cares about the 29% from the field and the 25% from behind the arc and the 8 turnovers that went with the 9 assists? He just needed one more assist, and that would have secured the win. So,
I know he didn't get 8 turnovers on his own.
What do you mean?
He didn't get 8. He got 8 turnovers, but just by himself, not the whole team?
Agent, come on. That's Westbrook. You know he got 8 turnovers on his own.
Are you playing with me? Did he really? He got 8 turnovers, man.
So who cares about the percentages? Who cares about the turnovers? It's that one assist that really held him back. Because I've been told for the last 2 years that triple-doubles, they translate to wins. Have you heard that?
This is news to me.
Oh man, that's crazy.
I saw Oladipo, I think it was a couple games ago, get 6 turnovers, and I thought, damn, in the playoffs, my guy? And it was crazy because while I was watching the game, I didn't feel like he was turning it over that much. I felt like a lot of it was just like all the big men down low. But 8, man, that's a new high right there.
Well, when it that's comes to Westbrook's turnovers, it's not all his fault. You know, when he passes the ball and Steven Adams, he has butterfingers, so it just bounces off his hands. And Carmelo, he drops the ball a lot, too. So it's always someone else's fault. But if he would have got one more assist, which would have been a triple-double, that would have secured the win. Because triple-doubles lead to wins. Because that's what I've been told for the past. Let me not go too hard. Because these are ifs.
So I'm going to reserve my opinion on the OKC. Now,
you don't get to throw me under the bus and you don't get to answer the question.
No, but it's not. But you were speaking clearly in hypotheticals.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I'm going to ask you the question. Hypothetically speaking, if OKC doesn't make it past the first round, what does that mean for Russ?
I don't think it means too much.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
Part of the reason is because...
I'm going to tell you right now, if they lose in the first round and you don't go in on Russ like I'm about to, I'll hang up this call.
Here's the thing, Lo. I actually believe Utah is a really good team. I don't just give them the game. I really believe Utah is a really good team. And I think they've been a good team and they've dealt with such an insane amount of injuries. And of course, they lose Gordon Hayward and then George Paul gets traded and even Rodney Hood is gone. And you're thinking, how are they going to recover? Is the team going to be the same? And now they have Ricky Rubio. Who wants Ricky Rubio on their team? But if they've shown me anything throughout their time since all those moves, man, it's that they're so serious about winning. And they do it consistently. And that's the most important thing. Because in the playoffs, you can be inconsistent. Probably win a game if you're lucky too. But if you want to go far in the playoffs, you have to consistently show up. It's 7 games you have to play. Well, 4 if you're consistent with it. And I just haven't seen that from this team. Now, the thing is, like, first of all, Gio Lowe, he shot 29%.
29%.
God damn.
With 8 turnovers. And you didn't watch the, you said you didn't watch it, right?
No, I didn't watch this game.
Ricky
I'm going to rewatch this one.
Ricky Rubio was literally just killing him, and Donovan Mitchell was just killing him when pick and rolls and finding their way in the mid range or coming off ball screens and finding themselves around the elbow jumper and consistently making shots because Russell Westbrook wouldn't defend them. It's ridiculous.
So Joe Ingles, 21 points, shooting 46%. Like,
And 50% from behind the arc. 50. Yeah,
like, you don't know who Joe Ingles is. It's okay, all right? Because you probably don't watch Utah games. But, yo, it's a mistake to start judging and making predictions based on paper. Yo, I'm telling you, you just got to watch this team play. As ridiculous as it sounds to be led by a rookie and a defensive anchor who's had injury problems throughout his career, to Derek Favors, who... Who the fuck still talks about Derek Favors? I haven't heard a single word about this guy in like 5 years. And you wouldn't have neither if you don't watch these games. But I'm just saying, man. Look, put the names aside. Look, put the man. Shoot. I have the kicks. I got PG ones. Got them for half price, like $60. Them shits is nice as fuck.
Man.
But here's what I'm gonna say. Westbrook is definitely not gonna be a top 5 player, but I would still put him in the top 10.
No, he'd be top 10. I mean, I'm not.
If he still loses the series.
Look, I don't care what you say. I don't care what anybody tells me about some matchups. I don't care any of that shit. Russell Westbrook, if, this is all hypotheticals, people. Let's be clear
of
about
course, this. Yes, of all course, yes.
All hypotheticals. But if they lose this series, I don't want to hear a thing about Westbrook. I don't want to hear anything. I just don't want to hear any
people are going to find a way to deflect. They're going to be like, and granted.
And I'm going to block those people on Twitter. I'm not going to. You can. If you try to
make
any.
Well, for one of the games, they have a point. The game Melo missed the last 2 shots. But I believe they shot 0 for 14 in the fourth quarter at the big 3.
Yeah, I know. I saw that graphic too.
In game 2. Yeah, I saw that.
Look, this is all ifs. But there's just no way. There's no way. I don't care about what the matchups. I don't care about what. If you're supposed to be that great of a player, right? You need to find ways to win. And I don't care what anybody's telling me, bro. Westbrook cannot be. He's not in the same conversation with them. He's not in the same conversation with these elite level players. If he loses this round, there's just no way. There's absolutely no way. There's no way. No way.
I agree with said statement, man.
But this is if. This is if, though.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely not a thing.
I'm going to tell you right now, if you're a Westbrook fan and you think I hate Westbrook now, watch them lose a series, and you definitely going to think I hate Westbrook. Because I'm not holding back no punches if they lose this series. I'm not holding back. Not a punch. It will not be a punch.
Not a punch
held back.
The 76ers have been playing fantastic. And it's so enjoyable to watch their team play, when, especially after watching a team like the Cavs just run ISO all game. You see a player like Bellinelli come off an off-ball screen, and then Embiid cuts, and then while they collapse on Bellinelli, because he's a great shooter, Embiid is down low. Now, Embiid, I believe in this game, shot pretty horribly. He was 2 for 11, shot 18%. But just like in previous games, we have players stepping up. Like Ben Simmons, of course, got his triple-double. J.J. Redick with 24 points. Even Covington was shooting well this time around. So it makes me incredibly happy to see this team succeed. You know, if you told me at the beginning of the season that the 76ers had even a slight percentage chance of being in the finals, I would have thought you were crazy. But that's a conversation a lot of people are beginning to have. And part of the reason why is because they're showing their dominance. Now, granted, they only won this game, game four by 4 points. That puts them up 3-1 against the Miami Heat. I believe in this series, I had the 76ers winning by six, if I'm not mistaken. But what I wanted to talk to you, Lo, about was Whiteside. Now, we talked about him on the last podcast, but since a lot has happened, of course, game three, he played pretty horribly. In fact, barely got any minutes.
He played bad in game three.
Yeah, but in game four, he shot 6 for 9. He got 26 minutes, more than what he's used to now. But that might have been because after game three, Whiteside said to the press that he thinks he deserves more minutes. So, I'm going to flip it to you, Lo. Whiteside thinks he deserves more minutes, man.
No, you just play better. Stop fouling Embiid every single time he touches the ball, and don't turn over the ball every single time you touch the ball. Whiteside had 4 turnovers tonight for people who probably listen to this on Sunday. Whiteside had 4 turnovers. From a player who doesn't really get that many touches, 4 turnovers. That's ridiculous. And I'm not going to sit here and act like Embiid played great because he had like 8 turnovers. So I'm not going to say...
What?
Yeah, Embiid had 8 turnovers. Yeah, I don't know why you all over
the... How is this happening? Oh, that's pathetic, yeah, yo. Come
Embiid,
on,
Embiid had 8 turnovers. So I'm not saying that Whiteside didn't play better, because he definitely played better defensively in game 4. But Miami lost a game that they were A, leading, 2, the Sixers shot terrible from the field, and they still won. As the Sixers, they shot 43% from the field and 22% from behind the arc. And they turned the ball over 26 times, and they still found a way to win.
Whoa!
They still won that game. Exactly, Agent. And I watched.
Damn.
And I watched that game, and Simmons brought it on home for the Sixers because he's just a better player than whoever they have in Miami, which is a huge reason why I think Ben Simmons might actually be better than Embiid, because he's been a much more consistent option. However, I give Embiid some slack due to him wearing the mask and stuff like that, but. First of all, shout out to Prince Prodigy. I hope you didn't delete that tweet you told me to save, because I screen capped it just in case you did delete it, because I'm pretty sure you probably did. But for anyone who tried to sit here on Twitter telling me about, oh man, Miami, they're gonna give them problems. Just wait. Shut the hell up. You obviously don't know what you're talking about, and you're obviously a Miami Heat fan. Don't tell me what Embiid is going to do.
They're really passionate, man. Like, they don't even want to, they don't even dive even remotely. They don't even dip their foot into criticism. If you even think about, on Twitter, when I said Denver deserved to be in the playoffs more than the Heat, the Bucks, and who was the last team?
The Wizards.
Yeah, the Wizards. The Heat fans, were the most angry. Like, some Wizards fans were like, ah, whatever. But Heat fans were like, how dare you say that? But again, Lo, I believe Wade stepped up in this game, if I'm not tripping. Let me double check. Dwayne Wade, in 25 minutes, scored 25 points. Granted, he shot a Kobe percentage of 45.5%.
That doesn't do it justice, because in the fourth quarter, he missed way too many shots. I'm not going to lie. Because he was shooting better than that, but in the fourth quarter, especially when they really needed it, he didn't show up too much down the stretch. He missed some free, if I'm not mistaken, he missed free throws, but I know there was a few shots that he just didn't make.
So, I'm on this last question. If Miami has any shot at coming back, what do they have to do?
What they have to do to come back in this series?
They gotta win 3 straight.
I don't think they can, but if there was a way for them to come back, Embiid would probably have to be hurt, and so would Simmons. I mean, I don't know if
you didn't even say they gotta get their Josh Richardson involved, James Johnson maybe get a little less.
James Johnson and Josh Richardson have played pretty good over the last 2 games. It's not like...
No, they have. Yeah.
It's not like that. And Dragic has been, especially over the last 2 games, Dragic has been fine as well. I mean, what are you... And in the one game that they won, Wade played out of his mind. Kelly Olynyk, if I'm not mistaken, is hurt. So that's definitely going to hurt them in the long run. But I don't know what they're going to say. But shout out to Prince Prodigy, man.
You gonna make a whole video about that one tweet he sent at you.
Here's an argument that he said on Twitter. People forget that the Heat are too young of a team. They're literally facing the 76ers, who has a rookie in Ben Simmons and a second year player and Dario Saric and Embiid. But the Heat are too young. Are you serious? The Heat are too young. That is the dumbest. That's just stupid. Like, please, you don't know what you're talking about. Don't ever go on my mentions telling me about your trash team. Please don't. I just speak facts. Don't tell me to save my tweet because I know I'm going to be right, but I saved it.
That's funny. He told you to save it.
Yeah, he told me to save my tweet. No, don't worry. I saved it. I saved it, and I dare you to delete your tweet, and I'll just expose you. But then he also said 9 hours ago, there's no way a superstar isn't looking at the Heat and saying he doesn't want to go there. No, there's plenty of superstars who are saying that. Because you know, because Gordon Hayward, who's not even a superstar, looked at the team and was like, I'm not going over there. I'm going to Boston. Get the fuck out of here. No one who wants to go to Miami.
That was his rebuttal, that he thinks that superstars are just eyeing Miami.
His superstar
are eyeing Miami, they're eyeing the women, the fact that there's no state income tax, and the weather. Alright, that's it.
They're eyeing Miami. Apparently, because a superstar has the ability to go there, and a team that I guess who's young on this team? I'm thinking about right now. Who's young on this team? What Winslow?
They got some young folks. Tyler Johnson's young.
I know, but they're better players in Dragic, Whiteside, and Wade, and even Kelly Olynyk and Wayne Ellington. Like those are veterans. Those are not like some players who've been in the NBA like 2 or 3 years. Those are veterans.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is he saying? That's the reason I can't. I can't do it, bro. I just can't do it.
All right, Lo. So the Celtics finally conceded
the
game.
Shout out to you, Prince Brody. Shout out to you, bro.
The Bucks finally got a dominant win, man. And I have the Celtics again winning this series in six. But the Bucks have another home game coming up. So they have a chance to actually tie the series if they take advantage tomorrow. And they have the early game, which is the 1 p.m. game. So I still believe that as young and inexperienced and whatever you might believe that the Celtics are, that the Bucks cannot be good enough, long enough, to win in a 7-game series. At least not the way they're playing right now, especially against a team like the Celtics. And of course, we know likely coach of the year, Brad Stevens. What changed with you, Lo? Because you had the Bucks winning originally. Do you have them winning now that they finally won a game?
I still have the Bucks winning. For me to have a massive shift in another direction is when you go home and you're still unable to win. That's when I start to reevaluate. But the Celtics,
that's gonna be the next game.
I'm just saying the Celtics, they did what they were supposed to do in the first two games, and that is win at home. They would have to split the away game for them to go up 3-1 for me to finally be like, all right, now this is definitely a problem. However, the Bucks, they changed up a little bit this game. A huge adjustment on the part of Giannis. They won a game, even though Giannis only scored 19 points, because a lot more players are involved. Eric Bledsoe was much more aggressive, which I like. Jabari Parker came off the bench. He was much more aggressive as well, gave you 17 points. Thon Maker, huge improvement, 5 blocks, 5 rebounds, 14 points in 24 minutes. And Chris Middleton is still doing his thing. If I'm not mistaken, him and Klay Thompson is on a whole nother level right now, but him and Klay Thompson are easily the most efficient scorers so far in these playoffs. So, you know, the fact that they were still able to find a way to win.
How about Melo? You don't think
so? Chill. Okay, I forgot about Russ too. Jesus, I don't know why I forgot about Westbrook.
Yes, sorry. Good point.
But yeah, I'm happy that they're starting to realize that we can't just rely on Giannis to win us games. We all have to contribute. We need to move the ball.
They knew that because they lost the first two games, and I think there's 0% chance Thon Maker will continue doing that. There's a chance, like, you know, Brogdon might step up in a game or two, but I can't see that team and all the players you just mentioned performing like they just did over the next three games to win the series.
Yeah, it's going to be hard, but I'll say this. I mean, Tatum didn't really have the worst game. He didn't have a really bad game. He could have better, but he didn't have that bad of a game. Horford had one of those nights where he just wasn't on the boards like he normally is, and I think that was great. The Bucks made a really, really big effort on the boards. on tonight, especially from Chris Middleton. Chris Middleton was very active on the boards, crashing them. And I think they made more of a unified effort to get on the boards, because it was a little bit boards. It was a lot of boards grabbed from multiple players, not just Giannis. So I do like that from them. And they made adjustments by getting other people involved. But when you look at the Celtics, they are going to have nights where they struggle offensively. And so if you're the Bucks, you just have to hope that you can get that a little bit more, that struggle a little bit more with the Boston Celtics while still being a consistent team and try to find some type of rhythm. But also, I mean, I agree with you. Thon Maker, I don't know if he's going to play like this every night for the next 3 to 4 games. I don't think that Giannis is going to go 3 for 4 from behind the arc. I'm pretty sure that Jabari Parker, I'm not pretty sure. I think Jabari can get you 17. But, you know, there were some things that happened in this game that more likely won't happen moving forward. And also, they only turned the ball over 9 times. They kept control of the ball. So that was also a positive thing as well. But I don't know. I'm not going to go too crazy, because the Celtics did what they were supposed to do and won at home. Now they just need to steal a game from them while they're away. But until that happens, it could easily just be tied up 2-2 after the next game.
All right, I feel pretty confident about this next series, Warriors versus the Spurs.
Okay, no, no. We're not talking about that series. That series.
No, but I just wanted to say that this was the only series I had in a sweep, and it seems like it might be a sweep.
Okay, let's hurry up and get to the Raptors and Wizards. Come on.
Right. So since the last podcast,
you're ducking this. Come on, let's get to it. Let's get to
it. Oh no, I'm not ducking this. No.
You're ducking it. Come on, let's get to it.
Oh no, I've never been known to duck anything. Okay, all but, right. The Wizards, since the last podcast, there's only been one game played, and it's game 3. Game 4
is tomorrow. Which is ridiculous, right? Like, you got teams who already played 4 games. The Wizards and the Raptors are still on game 3. That's fucking unbelievable. But go ahead.
And I think the Raptors played on the first day as well. So it's not even like...
Yeah, that's crazy.
Anyway, so the Wizards, first game home, and they end up winning the game, and it wasn't even close. Like, throughout the whole game, it was 10-15 point lead. Then they pushed it to 20 at one point, and the Raptors just looked like they evaporated. Now, the only difference in this game in terms of the roster being Van Fleet was unavailable due to an injury.
Oh, my God. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying that to say that DeLon Wright was playing heavy minutes, and he wasn't really performing that well. So in previous games, game 1 and 2, while he was hitting the threes, this game he kind of just seemed lost out there. But more importantly, it just seemed like the team as a whole was just unable to get buckets. Not only that, but finally, for the first time in the series, we saw both Wall and Beal have a good game together. So it was not just one of them having a good game and the other one not. It seemed like they were both doing it together. So, interestingly, it was a very frustrating game across the board. DeRozan looked like he was so ready to get a technical throughout the game, and his teammates were consistently holding him back to try and avoid that situation. There was some definite non-calls that, I need to show you the clip, because it was probably one of the most egregious non-calls I've seen in a very long time.
Would DeMar, end up on the floor?
No, the one where he held the ball in midair, he was, who was the one defending him? It was Kelly Oubre, in his little smug face. And they did no call, and the ball rimmed around, and it still dropped. And DeRozan just looked at the ref like, yo, what do I have to do to get this call? And so that almost anger kind of just fueled the Raptors to, like, continuously just go down this downward spiral. Wizards played a great game, finally. And the guy who I was making a lot of jokes about, Gortat, was finally playing well, given the fact that the only reason he was getting any kind of look was because the Raptors were sending doubles on John Wall. But the pick and roll seemed to be working this time. Even if it wasn't John Wall scoring, he was finding creative ways to get it inside to Gortat. And the rotations just weren't fast enough. Yo, Raptors lost game 1. And I have the Raptors winning in 5, so for me, I'm hoping it's just that one game that the Raptors ended up dropping. But the Wizards do have another away game. Yo, what's the chances they win it?
You mean the Wizards have another home game, as you say?
Yeah, that's what I just said.
I thought you said the Wizards have another away.
Okay. I meant home. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. Like you said, I don't want to say that the idea of Bradley Beal and John Wall both having another, like, really, really good outing is hard to believe, because it's not. I mean, they're still one of the better backcourt duos in the NBA. I think what's hard to fathom them consistently doing, like you said, Gortat being a consistent threat off the pick and roll. However, I think that John Wall is a good enough passer to find Gortat when he needs to. But also that this game, they got a lot of help coming off the bench, which they normally don't receive. Mike Scott, 12 points, 4 for 4 from the field, 2 for 2 from behind the arc. Kelly Oubre, another 12 point coming off the bench. And then Mahimi gave them quality minutes in the short amount of time that he played as well. So those are things that normally don't happen for them. And so I could see that being a different trend. However, if Bradley Beal and John Wall are performing the way that they played last game, it's going to be a difficult series for the Raptors to win. But I don't necessarily know how frequently that's going to happen from those two. And it may not happen enough. I don't think it will happen enough for them to win. But if I'm Toronto, like I said, stated in the last series, you gotta get one win. I mean, that's all you have to do. You just need to split the away games, and try to take one game while you're away, and you can go back home having a 3-1 lead and close it out in five. I think that's what they need to just look at it as. They missed one opportunity, and they played against a team who had a really, really great outing for one game. I don't necessarily know if they're going to be able to duplicate that success. And so if you're Toronto, you just got to execute a little bit better for one more game while away. And then if you're able to do that, I think Toronto has a pretty good chance of winning. But Toronto, if John Wall and Bradley Beal are going to play like that, then if Bradley Beal and John Wall are going to play like that, then, anything is possible if they play like that, man.
Interestingly enough, the game was incredibly close, and then it might have been foul trouble, but for whatever reason, they decided to bring on Ion Mahimi, and I don't think he's even touched the floor or gotten any kind of significant minutes, but it was when he was on the floor, they started to make it a run, and they pushed it to like 10 points, and then the rest of the team just did it all after that. Yeah. It got to the point where the Raptors put in Lorenzo Brown. You probably don't know who that is because he came straight up.
I know who it is.
He rarely ever plays minutes in the NBA, but they put him in for a majority of the fourth quarter, and there was a chance where they got it down to 13, but then right when you think it's close, Mike Scott drops another three.
I may not know who that is. Don't try me in my basketball knowledge, agent.
You don't know who it is. He just came out the D League. There's no way he knows.
I know who that is because he had like a good game towards the end of the season. He's a ball headed dude with a headband. I know who he is.
No. You just Google the picture on Google Images, man. It's okay.
Oh my
God.
Jesus Christ.
It's okay. It's all right to not know, my guy.
My God. Because the Raptors tried. If I'm not mistaken, he was the same player who had like a really good game with the Raptors, and earlier that exact same day he played for the G League team and then came up in the same day to play another game for the Raptors, right?
No, that was Bruno Caboclo. Try again. All right, Lo.
I think you're wrong. I think I'm almost 100% sure what I just said was true. But go ahead.
So in the first couple of games, the Raptors put in Lucas Nogueira at the center spot, and they kind of just started to run away with it. Even though he can't shoot the three ball, and he's really no offensive threat whatsoever, he's great on defense, and just him being on the floor, it was almost like a key, like an activation card to just get the ball rolling and to begin to increase the lead. So they tried it again in game three, and it did not work out. It wasn't quick before Dwayne Casey just pulled him out and said, that is not the move, and he just went right back to Jonas Valanciunas. Also he played Pascal Siakam.
He played Siakam a little bit as well. He played Siakam more.
In honesty, I just think like here's what the Raptors need to do, man. First of all, they're not gonna shoot that bad again in game four. Won't happen that. But just play Poeltl some of the minutes.
Y'all didn't even shoot that bad though.
Nah, it was a lot of ugly shit going on in that game, bro, trust me. There was a lot of turnovers too. I don't know what the final count was, but I know in the first quarter.
There was a lot of turnovers. But it wasn't the first, y'all didn't shoot that bad. I mean, y'all shot 45%. And 40,
nah, they
43%.
Did shoot bad because it was.
They shot 43% from behind, bro.
It was just wide open shots going clank, 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 nah. and they didn't get foul calls. And DeRozan was like, "Fuck this shit!" And then he started to act all like emotional, and then more shots started. DeRozan airballed 2 3-pointers, Lo. Airballed. One of them was open.
I don't know why you think that he's. I mean, he's a
because he's been hitting them throughout the series.
He's a better. But I mean, come on now.
Beal also, I believe, airballed him, but his was definitely contested at the buzzer. But it's always funny because the whole chat's yelling, airball, 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 and, you know, getting
I'll say this. Regardless. I only saw DeMar get to the free throw line twice, in the same with Kyle Lowry.
I need to send you the clip. In fact, let me find the clip because I'm sure someone uploaded it to YouTube. It was so ridiculous. All right, go ahead, talk while I find the clip.
I don't know. I just, to kind of wrap up the series, I just feel like y'all still have a really good chance to win. If I was them, Bradley Beal and John Wall would have to beat me for another three more games. And I don't necessarily know if that could happen, especially how inconsistent John Wall tends to be from time to time. But, you know, I think that they're fine. And, wrapping up that Spurs series, that series is done. That series is about to be wrapped up. And to be honest with you, that might be the last game of the Spurs dynasty. Because if this is...
If this is
Popovich's last year as a coach, and they're going to trade away Kawhi Leonard, or allegedly they are, this might be it, bro.
Damn, you really believe that?
I don't think it's crazy to believe it, though. I don't think it's that crazy.
I don't know that it's crazy to believe. It's just... All right, man. I don't know. Anyway, I can't find the clip. I'll send it to you afterwards. I'm looking at Free Dawkins. He didn't upload the Game 3 DeRozan clips, man. I guess he didn't score enough buckets to get a whole... Didn't he drop like 20-something points? Anyway, Game 4 is going to be a brand new game, and I'm sure the Raptors are going to find a way to win. I was so happy to record this podcast aside from talking about my Raptors losing. But, hey, last night took an L, and tonight they... Say it with me, Lo.
No.
Say it with me, Lo. I'm not going to. Come on, man. I know you want to say it, bro.
I'm not going to. So, wait, let's. So, tomorrow, game 4, Boston or Milwaukee, who you got?
Boston.
I got Milwaukee. Game 4, Golden State and San Antonio.
Golden State. Same. Is that.
Game 4, Toronto and Washington.
Toronto, of course.
And then finally, game 4. All of these are pretty early games, too. Cleveland or Indiana?
I'm gonna go with Indiana.
That's gonna be the most interesting series. Jesus Christ!
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna watch that one. That's unbelievable. It can go either way,
I'm gonna go Cleveland.
I feel like they're both evenly matched, man. Should be interesting.
Which is a shame, but
it is.
Any highlight players, man?
Wow. I want to give a highlight player to, I'm trying to think. Is it too generic to give it to Anthony Davis himself?
I'm going to give it to Rondo and Jrue Holiday.
We'll just give it basically to the three stars.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm going to give it to.
All right. Anthony Davis finally in the playoffs. When DeMarcus went down, we all thought, wow, the one time. And then he still managed to not only get his team in the playoffs, but to embarrass the Portland Trailblazers in the process in what is a dominating feat. And, you know, it almost gives me hope that they're going to stand a chance against the Golden State Warriors, although in hindsight, they probably don't stand a chance at all. But he deserves a highlight player for sure.
And then like I said there before, do I want to highlight just one? Nah, fuck it. I'll just say both of them. Jrue Holiday and Rondo. Easily my two highlight players. What they've been able to do has been amazing. Playoff Rondo, he might actually be the best passer in the playoffs right now. But playoff Rondo is alive and well. And then when it comes to Holiday, defensively, he has been really, really good while still being a consistent offensive threat. Not turning the ball over as much. And been really consistent from not only just from the field, from behind the arc as well. I mean, you can't really...
Is he the point guard that's playing the best in the playoffs right now?
I mean, I don't know if people... I don't think he's... I mean, technically speaking, he's a point guard, but he doesn't play the point guard position because they play three guards on the perimeter.
He's still a point guard.
I mean, if that's the case...
He's averaging 7-8 assists.
If that's the case, I mean, what does that mean? What does that mean?
I mean, he's always been a PG. Just because they have multiple people at the same position playing doesn't mean he's a shooting guard or a small forward now.
I don't know.
Like a lot of the time when Van Fleet plays on the Raptors, sometimes they run DeLon Wright, Van Fleet, and Lowry, 3-point guards. That doesn't mean Lowry is playing shooting guard.
Someone has to be playing shooting guard. They all can't be point guards.
Not 3-point guards, power forward.
No. To answer that question, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. They just closed out the game. They just closed out that series with both him and Anthony Davis dropping 40. That outside of him and who, Ben Simmons, those are like really the only two point guards who have been like consistent through the playoffs, right? And unless I might be forgetting somebody.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, my bad, Dame. I'm bugging.
What?
Let me chill.
I'm bugging, but I mean,
you say Drew Holiday is a point guard, I guess, yeah, he's been
the best point guard. My recording stopped like halfway through. Dude, what the
fuck? Are you serious?
Nah, but on that note, man, I'll catch you guys in the next podcast. You know, I forgot what I call this one. I think I call this one, if you got swept in the first round, you're probably trash podcast, man. Thank you guys for watching. Yo, make sure to rate the podcast a 5-star on, or whatever. You know what? Just rate it, all right? And thank you guys for listening, man. Yo, the podcast has been doing better and better, man. Have you looked at the numbers?
I have, man. I have been looking at the numbers. You know, I'm an analytical guy now, you know?
Oh, of course.
All I do is look at analytics. I look at my analytics, man. That's all I do, man. Have you seen a true shooting person? Let me chill out.
Hey, make sure to send me those emails to callmeagent00@gmail.com.
People are not going to be sending me emails. I ain't gonna lie. They probably are, because I've been saying some stupid shit. I ain't gonna lie.
Not only are they sending me the emails, they're telling me their age and saying, yo, why does he think I don't have an email when I'm 14? Like, yo, bear mans have emails. And it's the most hilarious thing, Lo. One person was defending you in the emails. He's like, yo, agent, I really mess with your videos, but you really ain't know nothing about bass. I was about to respond to him like, bro, don't let him brainwash you, man.
Don't let him brainwash you. Oh, my God. Don't let him brainwash you. That's the dumbest. Oh my god, you're ridiculous. Well, as a side note, as you say that, someone actually did DM me telling me that they emailed you saying that you didn't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no, I definitely get some of those emails as well, but I never
get any of those DMs.
Yeah, because who's gonna personally message you and tell you own, because they'll know your username. Email is a little bit more cryptic. Like, I don't know who's sending the email. Cut it unless out, agent. Like their name could be like Princess Queen 93. And like, you'll never know who that person is, but they still tell me, Lo, that you won't know what you're talking about. So that's really all that matters at the end of the day. So, you know, it just goes to show, one, that everybody of all ages has emails. And two, is that they know the truth, man. It's good to know the truth. It's good to travel and really scavenge to find the truth, and here I am just spitting truth all the time, man. Yo, if you guys enjoyed, do what you gotta do. Thank you guys for listening. We're out.
Peace. Well, cut it out.
Lo, give up. I'm doing it first every single podcast. Just give up, my guy. I'm gonna send myself an email just to remind me that you don't know shit. You know, it's getting to that point, my guy.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents, which means you're going to start telling your kids to clean up before the cleaning lady comes. Doesn't make sense, but you're the parent and they're the kids. You're going to start telling them that now too. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance. And there's your opening to remind them who pays the bills around here. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.